Well, all right. Welcome to a special edition of Uncle Bobby's Country Corner. I have been tarred and feathered, and deservedly so, because my guest today deserves what we're getting ready to do right now, and that is just peel the layers back, pull the tables and chairs back, and swing for the fences. Welcome again to Uncle Bobby's Country Corner, Mr. Jason Whitlock.
Thank you, Bobby. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it. I'll be honest. I wasn't satisfied with the last time, Bob. We didn't get to have the kind of conversations you and I have. And, you know, I didn't know what the hell you were doing. So I said, let me come back, man. Well, so me and Bob can just... So y'all fitting to sit in on the kind of conversation Bob and I have on the telephone.
At 5 in the morning.
Trust me, that's much better than what you heard previously.
At 5 in the morning. Ring. Hey, Jason, man, what the hell is going on with Andre Iguodala, man? What the fuck is that?
First name is Andre Iguodala, Bob.
Andre.
That's what I would tell you on the phone. So I mean, sure. It's Andre. Look, man, Iguodala this weekend allegedly said he's trolling the media. Referring to somebody, Steve Kerr, Adam Silver, the ownership of the Golden State Warriors, as Massa. I'm going to just do what Massa tell me to do. And then at some point, he says, and I'm going to use your word, Bob, your favorite word. He said, y'all want me to act like a dumb nigga?
Oh, my
and,
God.
he said this out in front of the media, in front of everybody.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Why? What? What is the purpose? What is he trying to do? He says he's trolling the media. They're in a little bit of a losing funk. Steve Kerr was sitting the players down. But as I said yesterday on my TV show, Speak for Yourself, it's not a coincidence that some player on the Golden State Warriors would involve himself in this type of trolling racial behavior. If you look at the area he's in, San Francisco, Silicon Valley, that's where all of this unrest and revolution and far left agenda that the black athletes are being so attracted to right now, that's ground zero for it. Silicon Valley is financing much of the unrest that's going on around the country, that's far left unrest. And so if you look, Steve Kerr been very vocal politically, anti-Trump. Steph Curry, who never says anything, got upset with Under Armour about Trump. Colin Kaepernick, right there in San Francisco, taking the knee. Now you have Andre Iguodala wanting to inject himself into the racial conversation in an unnuanced, unsophisticated, controversial way. He's walked it back. But again, if we look at the place, ground zero, San Francisco, tradition of far, far left politics. Look, Oscar Grant, Oakland, right there. Black Panthers, Oakland. And so it's not surprising that this is where this is coming from. Now, we can have a debate how much of it is healthy, how much of it is anti, not in our best interest as African Americans. That's the debate. But it's no surprise to me that another athlete from San Francisco would involve himself in a racial controversy. Again, this is the melting pot, the boiling pot is San Francisco. This is where this, all of this black Twitter civil rights movement, Silicon Valley. That's who Twitter and all of that, Silicon Valley. So not surprising to me that Andre Iguodala said something stupid along racial lines.
And when you say something stupid, when I first heard it, I couldn't really find a construct for it. All right, I'm like, okay, what's this motivated by? I mean, is something happening in the locker room? Is something happening to him in terms of the social environment? What triggered that?
Again, I think what triggered it is one, he thinks he's really smart. And if you listen to Steve Kerr's comments, oh, Andre's really intelligent. So amongst a group of young NBA players, and again, I don't know Andre Iguodala, but amongst a group of NBA players, he may be the tallest person, the smartest person in that locker room. Does that make him unbelievably smart? I don't know. Based on these comments and how they were delivered and where they were delivered, he's not very smart. But hell, maybe he is the smartest guy intellectually in that locker room.
Oh, no. David West would have to affect
you would think that. Yeah. David West would be. You got to get a little bit closer to Mike or I'm going to overpower you on this.
No,
deal.
You ain't going to overpower me. No, you're not. In my house. Yeah. All right. I'll sit on it if I have to.
There you go. There you go.
But no, I know in terms of just having friends who know David West well and some of his history, that brother is
David West is very, you're right. He played for quite a while with my favorite team, the Indiana Pacers. David West. You're 100% right. So I would imagine they're having conversations in that locker room. David West in San Francisco, and I'm not blaming David West or saying he's responsible for the comments Andre Iguodala made, but again, being in San Francisco, a hotbed for these types of conversations and activity, that's, again, Andre Iguodala allegedly smart, but in my opinion, came off very stupid here. And I think if you look at the whole of the NBA and its embrace of far left progressive politics, it's a mistake. Feels good in the moment, feels extra black in the moment. It's bad business. Again, I look at NBA players and it's like they have no business savvy. Because the first thing a businessman does is identify who his customer base is. And then he starts catering his behavior to his true customer base. And again, that's not what the NBA is doing. If they look at who's in the arena, who's buying the tickets, it's families, it's corporate, it's white people. And again, they're selling out. Well, what's a dope dealer do? Does he not sell out to his customer base?
Completely.
And so everybody, we're in this society, in this culture now where the dope dealer is some type of revered figure. And you got all the athletes and the rappers. Everybody wants to be a dope dealer. Everybody wants to act like a dope dealer. But do they actually follow the tenets of a dope dealer? Because a dope dealer sells out to his customer base. And so if you're selling basketball, sell out to your customer base. Now, if you want to be a political activist, remove that from your business and go be a political activist away from your business. Because, again, a dope dealer, when he's selling you dope, he ain't giving you free turkeys and Christmas presents while he's doing that. He does that at Christmas time. That's away from his business. He's selling you heroin and crack and weed when he's doing business. So I look at these young athletes and these young people. They don't have a business mindset. They're not savvy about their approach. And maybe some of them are, because I think LeBron James actually is savvy about his approach. And he really is. He's all about the Nike business. And that's where I think a lot of his political activism of late is coming from. It's about protecting Nike's corporate interests.
Now, you leaped into a lane that I'm fascinated by in this way. The modern athlete has been pampered most of his life. Many of them haven't finished, barely finished high school.
Yep.
And then they're thrust into this position where money is no longer an immediate problem. It may be in another 10 years. But for now, all of their needs are met and beyond, and they're given opportunities to speak on issues that they're not very well versed in, historically speaking. Now, with that being said, what does the role of a media person such as yourself have in trying to create some kind of balance in terms of what they're projecting and what's really going on?
Well, I just try to bring a real conversation, and I just try to say what I actually think and what I actually see and try to point them to be honest with you, what I've tried to do to most athletes that have an interest in really being interested in change, I try to point them to Jim Brown. That's our common thread, Bob. That's the tie that connects us, is we our respect and admiration and support of Jim Brown and belief in what Jim Brown has stood for nearly 80 years, or, you know, for as long.
60 sure.
years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I try to direct athletes like, no. If you really are about change, then you really need to be about the people at the street and working class level, and you need to be about action that gives them a chance not to feel good, but to actually improve their lives. Most of what we see, almost all of what we see over Twitter and what we see from athletes, and again, I like, gestures are great. When John Carlos and Tommy Smith did that gesture in the 60s, it was appropriate and it was effective. But John Carlos and Tommy Smith didn't have $100 million contracts. They didn't have access to banks and billionaires and support people and blah, blah, blah. And so if they had all of that, I would have asked them to do more than a gesture. I would put your money where your mouth is. Where are you investing? And again, this is where I respect LeBron. He's investing in Akron. But I see from a lot of other athletes, it's about feel good. What can I do to make people feel good? And as Black people, we get way too caught up in how we feel and not are people putting opportunities in front of us.
You know, a great example of that is a mutual friend of ours, more so yours than mine in terms of the longevity of your relationship with Jalen Rose. Jalen has been, he hadn't made a lot of fuss, but he has spent millions of his own dollars in Detroit with the Jalen Rose Leadership Academy.
100%.
You know, and I look at that, and I also see how he comports himself. You know, when he speaks affirmatively about what he knows and what he's done, because that whole Fab Five thing, you know, it turned into another orbit after people looked at it closely and said, okay, this is what really happened, what we thought happened. And he marched right through that and continued to put money back into his own community. And the reason I bring that up in the construct of what we're talking about right now in terms of San Francisco, that's the polar opposite, because he went back home and he continues to invest in human development in Detroit. And when we talk about how we endear athletes and hold them to a standard where they cannot be challenged for some of the foolishness that goes on, we do have to address that forthrightly, in my opinion.
Well, the thing I like about what you're talking about with Jalen Rose, and yeah, I've known Jalen since he was 19 years old, is when you start a school, you're planting seeds. You're planting trees. Trees grow roots, grow up big and strong, hard to move. And too often, we're into instant gratification. And instant gratification doesn't grow roots. It doesn't grow big and strong. It doesn't become immovable. And so Jalen is a guy that I respect the hell out of him, because not because he's perfect, because he's not, none of us are. But what he was smart enough to do is align himself with someone he believes is just like Jim Brown. Jalen's connected to Isaiah Thomas. And that's who his mentor is. And that's who he looks to for advice and guys. How can I make an impact? How can I take this wealth that I acquired in the NBA and on television and have it grow roots and grow other, the next group of Jalen Rose? That academy, I'm sure, will not be perfect. But I guarantee you it's going to help some folks, and it already has helped some folks. And again, you may not see the instant results, but I guarantee you 20 years from now, there will be stories to tell about the trees that grew from that investment.
You know, when we talk about personalities, I think about somebody that I've been around a number of years. And quite frankly, I've had to shake my head sometimes. And that's Floyd Mayweather. Floyd has had a platform for the last, 10 years strong.
Yep.
And I can't see the social impact.
I'm not... This will sound like an excuse for Floyd, and to a degree it is. But we got to remember where what platform is he operating from? Boxing. That's not a platform. And I know Muhammad Ali operated from that platform, but if we really understand Muhammad Ali and what made him great, it was the Nation of Islam and Elijah Muhammad. People are uncomfortable saying that because they don't like the Nation of Islam. But you can't love the fruit and disavow the tree. Mm. And so Muhammad Ali is the fruit. The tree is the Nation of Islam and Elijah Muhammad. So you have to give them their respect. Floyd Mayweather doesn't have that kind of a tree. He's got Roger. So let's just keep it real. He's got Roger. No disrespect to Roger. Roger's raised a son that's a great champion, made a lot of money. Great legacy for Roger.
No, Floyd. Floyd Sr.
I'm sorry, Floyd Sr. Roger's the uncle. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Floyd Sr. But anyway, they have raised some good fruit that's off in a different lane. Floyd did, you know, as a boxer, you don't go to college. I'm not, again, could Floyd do more and do better? Absolutely. I'm not going to knock him just indiscriminately and just say, hey, he should be doing X, Y, and Z. He doesn't have the same, you know, Ali had Elijah and Malcolm X.
I guess, and I'm not clearly because of my relationship with Sam Watson and my affection for Al Haymon and what he created with Premier Boxing Champions.
Yeah.
It's not even about disparaging him. It's just acknowledging the fact that because once he was thrust into that situation, I wonder if he ever stepped back. I know he didn't step back and say, this is larger than me in terms of the impact that it had because it had a ripple effect on
his journey's not over. He's okay. Just 40 years old. I see a guy, and again, I've never liked Floyd Mayweather. I'm defending him now. A great accomplishment in boxing. He's 40 years old. I see a guy trying to transition a little bit. To me, he was too much of a buffoon as a boxer, ducked too many fighters, but that's nitpicking. Right now, what I see from Floyd is a guy trying to transition and trying to the best of his abilities, be a role model about entrepreneurship, having ambition and a vision. He's trying to connect with people, I think, as a businessman and trying to be a role model in that lane to the best of his ability. Is it ideal? Hell no. Is he a guy that, yeah, it's just hard for me to knock him in that capacity.
Okay. Now, on the boxing side of the game, Premier Boxing Champions, are they going to be able to, first of all, survive the setback that they had with the lawsuits with Arum and Oscar De La Hoya and bring boxing back to some level of preeminence?
Don't know enough about it to be informed on that conversation. Just
you don't even watch boxing no more.
No, I watch it, but I'm not informed. Some of the stuff I'm laying out to you about, I've thought very deeply about.
Mm-hmm.
You move me someplace where I haven't thought that deeply, I don't want to dirty up what I said by just throwing out the top of my head opinions.
Well, then let's reel back to the focal point of today's discussion then, and that is you brought up Iguodala for a reason, and what does that segue into?
To me, it segues into a conversation about the NBA. You know, it's one of our favorite topics as African Americans in sports, the NBA. And is it growing? Is it maxing out to the best of its ability? I think a lot of people give the NBA way too much credit. They give David Stern and Adam Silver way too much credit. They've the athletes, LeBron, he's so powerful and blah, blah, blah. And again, I'm a LeBron James supporter. I like to talk about approval ratings a lot of times on personalities and celebrities. My approval rating for LeBron is probably 72-73%. It used to be higher. Some of the stuff he's done recently has knocked him down a peg. But overall, for the most part, I approve of LeBron James and the things he's doing. Having said that, I think what LeBron represents as athletes trying to dominate and control the NBA while still playing. I think most people are like, oh, that's great. Most powerful athlete of all time. That's awesome. And the athlete should. I'm not so sure. And again, I haven't reached a conclusion, but I'm not so sure if that's the right play. Because, again, an athlete in his prime, acting as an athlete, is he smarter than an executive of any color, black or white? Is he smarter than an executive that is singularly focused on building and maxing out a business and a league? And so when I look across at the NBA, people think I'm crazy when I say this. Basketball is the most pervasive sport in America. Perhaps the most pervasive sport in all the world, but I'll just leave it at America. Everybody, your mama has picked up a basketball at some point. She understands basketball when she watches it. She put the ball in the hoop. The other team tries to stop you. It's not that complicated. Everybody you know at some point has, people in wheelchairs have picked up basketballs and shot it. It, again, it's the most pervasive sport in American history. Everybody does it. Everybody understands it. Football, the overwhelming majority of people have never touched a football, never thrown a football, never played football, don't remotely understand what they're watching when they watch football. I know sports writers. I know athletes. I know football players that don't understand football at all. And so, how can football be the most popular and pervasive sport in America when basketball is so much more easily accessed and easily understood? One business is run properly. One business is run improperly. One business supports 53 guys on an active roster. One business supports 15 guys on an active roster. Again, we get all caught up. LeBron James makes more money than allegedly Peyton Manning. Yeah. No, not a whole, but Peyton Manning, blah, blah, blah. But if you look at the sum total of who football is taken care of, if you look at the sum total of the number of African Americans football has given an opportunity to get to college and make NFL money, it totally dwarfs basketball. Completely. And so we as African, the NBA, it's the idea. It's run improperly. The players have too much power and too much influence over the direction of the game. Football is being run properly by the executives, and it dwarfs the NBA in terms of revenue generated, in terms of popularity, in terms of TV ratings, everything. But we're of the mentality, and we've been led to believe wrongly, in my opinion, that basketball is doing everything right in the NBA. NBA is better for black men than the NFL, and it's just wrong.
Well, I beg to differ about football in this way. I told you about 10 years ago that they needed to go to leather helmets, and you told me that I was crazy. And because of the succession of reports on
concussions. Right, so boxing needs to go to leather helmets too, right?
No, we ain't talking about boxing.
No, we're talking about sport, and we're talking about competition.
We're talking about football.
We're talking about imposing your will.
No.
Sport, boxing, football, it's about an imposition of wills. It's about competition.
Boxing has been the same sport all along. Football started out with leather helmets.
That's great. All football right. Started out as violent and imposition of wills. There's going to be risk, Bob.
Not that kind of risk. When you started creating a helmet that you can't even crush with a sledgehammer, whichever way you want to pronounce it, that's a different sport. The game was changed by equipment and technology.
And so,
to the extent that people became more susceptible to injury.
Go back
boxing
to Roman times.
Always been
go
boxing.
Back to Roman times, the gladiators and whatever. It's a gladiator sport, Bob. What? People ain't going
to
get hurt?
They're going to get hurt, but not to the extent where you got a guy that weighs 180 pounds who becomes just as impactful because of a helmet. That's changing the game in a different kind of way. And that's what happened with that helmet. It changed the game.
Have you run this by Jim?
No.
Oh, okay.
What that got to do with it?
Because Jim would be the expert. I'd want to hear his take on it.
Oh,
because Jim Brown, He don't have CTE. His mind is
sharp.
He gave
a lot of people CTE, though. Because back then, you knew better than to come at him a certain kind of way.
Look, I do think concussion issues are a legitimate concern. I'm glad there's an awareness about it. Having seen my grandmother go through Alzheimer's, she never played football. Have known a lot of people. There's a lot of things going on with the human body because of the drugs we ingest.
That's for sure.
That are not being talked about. And it's it's football. Well, how about all the drugs the guys ingest just to get out there and take the field?
Point taken.
Not going to be discussed because the pharmaceutical industry will not allow it.
Point emphasized, yes. But, you know, in terms of the NBA, and again, I'm not saying that there's
not
serious issues.
You're caping up for the NBA. Go ahead.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Because I love the way they played football when they played football. All right, now you got protect the quarterback to the extent.
Oh, now you're on the other side of the argument.
What?
Now you want less protection.
No.
You want a different helmet, but now you want the quarterback to be wide open.
Is he playing football or is he playing touch?
Bob, you're being inconsistent.
What's inconsistent about the fact that I don't want you taking off on him like he shouldn't be protected to a degree, but now you can't even wave at Peyton Manning.
I agree, but listen.
And there's a racial component to that.
Might be. Look, there's a big pie. Everything's a big pie. There's percentages of blame. Maybe 10% of it is racial. Maybe.
Okay.
But it might just be business. If you draw ratings with the quarterbacks, if Cam Newton makes your ratings tick up and that produces more money for you, you're going to protect Cam Newton. If Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers drive your ratings up and you're paying them $100 million contracts, you're going to protect that asset.
So where are we going at the position of quarterback? Is there still room for the statue West quarterback who just stands back and does all of the wonderful dainty things that
Why wouldn't there be? That's who Tom Brady is.
Of course.
He just won the Super Bowl. But Matt Ryan was just in the Super Bowl winning, played the same way.
All right, that brings up this question. Is it Tom Brady or Bill Belichick?
Is it Tom Brady or Bill
Belichick? That makes the New England
Belichick.
Patriots. I do, too. Right, we ain't going to be able to stretch that too far because I did want to
Why are you running away from the NBA, Bob?
I'm not going anywhere, man.
You done went from leather helmets. Now
okay, we'll deal with the NBA. Right. I got a problem with the NBA, right. And not so much where they started marketing individuals, and then everybody took off on that. It's LeBron and the Cleveland Cavaliers and all of that stuff. And it's like, okay, that's a long way from the days when I watched the Boston Celtics.
Yeah. And the Los Angeles Lakers.
Because that's who it was playing.
Right.
Okay. And now it's all about that individual. So they don't forget the fact that Russell Westbrook dominates the ball and does some amazing freakish things in the course of a game that he usually loses, especially when he's playoff
stars. What do you mean usually loses?
Yeah.
They got a winning record.
That's
going to make the playoffs.
And they're going to go out early. Maybe the first round. Because he is not making that team a championship. It's impossible. You can't hold the ball that much and win a championship. It's impossible.
He's not trying to win a championship. He's trying to survive right now this season and trying to make his team the best he can be and trying to prove that, you know, he's a great elite player.
He already did that. I hear you. He already did it because when I watched the body language between him and Durant last year, Durant was like, man, when you get through, this shot is true, if I could ever get the ball. Okay. And while you cherry-picking on defense, I'm back here getting dunked on. And so that whole thing kind of dissipated, in my opinion.
No question. Right.
And so I look at the league in that kind of way. They don't trust the game anymore. The game of basketball is a beautiful sport when it's played in the rhythm that it evolved to. The Cousy era, man, that was, and the Boston fast break, Bill Russell, boom, ball never touched the floor, man. I love watching the game and play the game.
Now myself. You sound old.
I am. I'm old enough to know what basketball is. I know what it looks like when they out there doing that ESPN shit. You know, I'm playing for the
highlight. Almost got the real Bob out there. Now you cussing. You drop an N-word or two, I'm like, we got the real Bob. This is the only time Bob don't ever use the N-word is on this podcast. Anytime I talk to Bob, it's N-word this, N-word that. I'm like, Bob, man, quit, man. You know I don't like that word, man.
Well, I was deferring to you, man.
I agree, but I'm just saying that. You got the shit. I know what's next. You're going to start dropping ML. There you go. And then the next thing you know, you're going to start calling me the N-word. I'm going to be upset. Look, man,
okay,
I'm going to throw you a curveball. I'm sorry for taking over your podcast.
No, man, you take over the phone conversation, so let's go, man. Shit.
Have you seen Get Out?
Man, I saw it. I must admit, man, it was a bad copy, and I couldn't hear much of it, man. But I saw enough of it.
Oh, you didn't go to the theater?
No, man, I didn't want to pay no money to see that in no theater, man.
You got to experience it for real, Bob.
What do you mean for real?
You need to experience the movie for real. It's what all the young people are talking about. The old bootleg copy, somebody holding a cell phone, and you trying to watch the damn movie.
I'm
going to buy you a ticket to see the movie, man.
Man, no, I'm going to... I'm gonna do right because it's hypocritical of me to advocate supporting black business, and I watched that bootleg.
That wasn't no black movie.
Okay, well we'll jump off right there then.
No black movie.
If it wasn't black, what was it?
It was
the central character.
Look, I'm going to. I'm gonna say what I really think. Don't. This is just me being real. Don't try to make too much of it. I think if anybody knows me, I like to talk about race. I think I have the credibility to talk about race. And I have the credibility to talk about it in a non-PC way without people losing their head. I'm not prejudiced. I think anybody knows that. You know, half the time I'm accused of being love white people.
But, oh, yeah.
Then half the time I'm accused I hate white people.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not either way. But anyway. That was a African-American movie.
Now, what is African-American?
Half black, half white. African-Americans, okay. What Barack Obama was.
Okay.
Half African, half white. And again, I don't say that in a derogatory fashion, but for the grace of God, mm-hmm. I could have had a African-American child by now. So I don't say that to be derogatory. I got some African-American friends, people I love. I get it. But that was a African-American movie, and it's conflicted. It's a guy. Jordan Peele is half black, the filmmaker, the director, writer, half black, half white.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in this era. Obama sparked this or has made it fashionable. The African-American is the gold standard for blackness. And basically what that is, I'm talking about in the mainstream America world. The more assimilated you are, the closer to white you are, you the end-all, be-all of blackness. And this movie told from that perspective, Jordan Peele, it was a movie about Jordan Peele, the director.
Mm.
He wrote it. He's half black, half white. He's married to a white woman. The movie vilifies white people. And basically, the gist of it seems to be that it's a mistake for any black man to ever date a white woman.
Mm.
And people can have that opinion if that's what they want to have. But when white people have that opinion, they're racist. When a half black, half white person makes a movie that basically seems to express that opinion, there's some type of visionary who's a genius. I saw it as a movie where, again, Jordan Peele is trying to work out his personal issues. This was damn near a documentary told in comedic form and a horror story, but it was about the conflict I think he feels as a half black, half white person married to a white woman. He makes a movie that says, look how black I am. I made a movie vilifying all white people. And so it doesn't ring authentic to me. I've seen the movie twice because I wanted to make sure I had the right read. Went to see it twice. Every white person in the movie is vilified. If they had made a movie where every black character, and maybe they have,
they have Color Purple.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. You forgot that one, huh?
No, I didn't. That's a great one.
Great.
What I'm just saying, it's a great point you just made.
Yeah.
Bringing that up.
Yeah.
Because I sat around beat my head like, wow, let me find a movie where this has happened before. And
we've yet to recover from the Color Purple. Mister is, oh my God! I wake up in the middle of the night thinking about Mister.
You gonna make me? I'm gonna watch Color Purple this weekend again. That's a great point,
man.
And again, Get Out. So the way you feel about and remember Color Purple is the way as a white person. If I went and watched Get Out, that's how I would feel having watched Get Out.
Now, I'm going to have to watch it again.
Yeah, no, I'm going to buy you a ticket so you can watch it for real. You ain't seen it yet. Watching it on somebody's cell phone ain't going to the movie.
Well, see, I was late to the movie. Yeah. It had already been out a while. And
it ain't been out but a couple of weeks.
That's a long time in the movie business, man. You know that, man. But the bottom line is, when I saw the brother, he was in another movie that I enjoyed the Mexican movie. What was the name of that movie?
I don't know.
Oh, it was a fabulous movie about the drug cartel and all of that.
Yeah. No, you're talking about the lead character. Yeah. Absolutely.
His name is Daniel.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah. I love the movie, Sicario.
Yeah. Ooh, that was deep, man. Yeah. That was deep. But that was the first time I noticed him, and he has a certain magnetism. He's got that it thing to me.
Yep.
You know, I was drawn to him in that movie. And then I saw him in this one. I didn't know anything about Get Out. I'd heard about it, but then I saw a caption of him. I said, I'm going to have to see that because I liked him in that other movie. Yep. And then when they started the movie out and he jumped in that white woman's arms, I was like, man, I'm getting nervous as a shell-shot rabbit uptown because I'm just from there, man. They get nervous, man. I mean, I had enough trouble with that, man, where I'm from, man.
Don't be scared, Bob. Don't fight the feeling.
I wouldn't even it flashed me back because when the boys, they started the movie with him choking that boy.
Yeah.
I thought that was from back the 50s or something. You know. That's how bad the copy was. I couldn't really make out, very much of it. And then next thing you know, we're in these folks' living room and he's jumping in this woman's arms and stuff. And I'm looking around like, man, this is going to be all right, you know. And then by the time they get to the house and all the diabolical stuff, cause I'm not really into scary movies because I grew up.
I didn't think it was a scary movie.
All that other stuff, you know, when they was, all that.
The part about him going into the sunken place.
Yeah, that's what you're telling me about.
Yeah, the sunken place. He's falling. Yeah. And again, this is what I think the movie is really about. Jordan Peele, he ain't in a sunken place. He's buried. They done buried his underwear in somebody's backyard. He's something low. He's in something deeper than a sunken place. He is lost. And trying to dig his way out with this movie, vilifying white people for the bigotry that he feels because he's married to a white woman.
Man, that's a mouthful.
It's a tantrum.
Well, the movie cost $5 million to make. It's grossed over $100 million. He's going to get another chance to fix some of his problems.
Yeah, no, because it's hit. This is what this hyper-left Black elite movement is all about. He's speaking to that crowd. Again, because this movie is for elite blacks that are assimilated, that are worried about how they're treated in their white social circles. That's what the movie is about. Now, you have some poor working class black people, non-college educated black people that like the movie because of its vilification of white people. But the true intent, this movie is for elite blacks who are assimilated, who run in mostly white circles or run among other elite blacks who move in white circles. And it's made for progressive and far left white people who, don't understand to some degree, they're being mocked in the movies because they're actually, if you really understand the movie, the Armitage family, that's the white family, that's the representative of elite, liberal, white America. They want to take the black person that they love and assimilate them, chop their head off, and put a white person inside of them. That's the seriously. Did you see the movie? That's what is going on.
Okay, now answer me this: what came over the brother? Who? Because to be honest with you, I think I fell asleep because I wasn't able to follow.
Did you watch it on the cell phone? But go ahead. Your iPhone battery got low.
iPhone? What the hell you talking about iPhone, man?
Your Samsung.
Yeah, man. But anyway, when I got back to it, he had figured out what was going on, and he had took that at Moose Head or whatever and stuck it up in Old Boy.
Yes.
That's when I kind of came back to the film, right? And then by the time he got out there and Toby, the guy
the other black man that was actually the grandfather. That was the Armitage's grandfather living inside of the black body.
Man, I gotta watch the whole movie.
You do, because again, you woke up as the father's being killed by the moose head or the deer head antlers.
Yeah.
And the father, what you missed was the father was preparing brain surgery to take the lead black character's body and put this old white man's brain in his head. That's all the black people you saw, the maid, and the guy you called Toby, the guy that was chopping wood and all that.
Yeah.
They were white people living inside of black bodies.
Yeah. They didn't have to make no movie to do that. I see that every day.
Thank you.
You know, all over town.
Again, some people might infer from watching the movie that, again, that's where I'm saying it's a documentary about Jordan Peele.
Mm.
It's about the conflict that he feels as a mixed race person and doubly as someone married to a white woman. Because again, Bob, I mean, let's keep it. I'm not knocking it. I'm not remotely knocking. Anybody that knows my history knows.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the grace of God, who next week might be me. Who the hell knows? Yeah. I'm not saying.
It gets hot in that jungle when you get that fever, ain't it?
Don't fight the feeling, Bob. Don't knock it till you try it. So, look, it could be. But I done lost my point. But, oh, yes. Anybody that has made that decision as a black man in America, I don't care what you do. That thought is running through your mind. Have I abandoned my people? What can I do to let my people know that I'm still with them? And so that's why you see from Colin Kaepernick, this again, not that he has a white girl, but he's mixed race and he's raised by white people. And he has done these demonstrative things to try to establish his blackness.
Mm-hmm.
And if I ain't going to go there, but when I do a comedy routine, I am going to go there. I'm going to talk
about it. You're already doing a comedy routine,
man. I'm going to bring Barack Obama into this. But again, if you understand the emotion you feel and some of the actions you take when you cross those racial lines as a black man in this country, particularly in this time, you just start trying to take, and again, I don't know who Jesse Williams, the actor, is married to, but I know he's mixed race.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy that stood up at the Oscars or whatever it was and just vilified white America. Have you not noticed? It's all the mixed race, light-skinned people that are being the most demonstrative and outspoken about racial issues. They're trying to establish their black credibility.
Man, you done talk so much shit. Somebody done actually called in here, man.
You scared of making phone more calls? Phone calls, man.
No, I ain't called nobody. Somebody called in.
You making more phone calls?
I ain't called nobody.
How can someone call? Are we on live?
As a motherfucker.
No, we not.
Yeah, we is.
Dude, it's a podcast.
Who said it was a podcast?
I don't know.
Hey, who's on the phone? They scared.
Who was calling in? Jordan Peele?
He might have been. I got to ask you this, man.
Yeah.
The back and forth you had last year with this cat from the New York Daily News, what jumped that off, man?
Sean King.
That's the one, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is he black, man, or what?
No.
He keeps saying somebody lying, man.
His birth certificate would have to be telling the first lie. His grade school and high school pictures would be telling the second lie. Dude's hair is as long as Bon Jovi's. Look, no, I've met him in person. He interviewed when I was at ESPN. We interviewed him for a job at the Undefeated. He told so many lies in that interview, it just set my radar off. I could smell the fraud all over him. The dude is white. He's the Rachel Dolezal for men. He's built Rachel Dolezal, the white woman that ran the NAACP that got lost her job.
Yeah,
Rachel Dolezal, kind of had a crush on her. Exactly what I'm talking about. Don't play dumb. But no, he's built a following over Twitter.
Right.
Where his Twitter feed has just, for 2-3 straight years, has just been a vilification of white people. And that has built him a following. And, you know, it's a hustle. The dude's been involved in hustle after hustle after hustle. He's ripped off or been accused of ripping off some charities and had some problems with some black churches and things like that. He's a con artist, man. Bottom line, end of story.
Well, you know, we'll go back to...
You just transitioned me to the last topic we need to talk about.
Which is?
And I may be ahead of you. I don't know if you know this. Have you heard this latest thing on Michael Brown that just came out in the past 2 days?
Yeah, he actually didn't rob the store.
You haven't heard the latest development?
I thought that was the latest.
No, it was not the latest. The latest development was this morning.
What happened this morning?
And so you do know last night there were protests outside the convenience store, shots fired, confrontation with the police.
Yes. No.
Last night in Ferguson, because of the story, because of this documentary and this 20-second clip and this documentary and the narrative. Well, now the convenience store has released the entire video.
So he did rob the place.
Without question. They show the entire, not the day of him getting killed, the entire video of his earlier visit where they're saying he was trading weed for blah, blah, blah. They showed the entire video, broke it down. It was an angry confrontation between them. They had carefully edited this. They put a clown suit on him. We need to stop with the Michael Brown deal, Bob.
No, they know we. I didn't never ride that train because whatever happened in that store
is irrelevant.
Because when he was walking down the middle of the street, and again, this is generational for me.
Yeah.
I done had enough problems, and I've been in enough situations where I had to make decisions. Is it more important to deal with this the way that I really want to and lose my life and ain't nobody, you know, they're going to, you know, get some money together to bury me and all of that? Or am I going to find a way to continue to live around this situation? When I saw him in the middle of that street, I said, this is going to go bad. And then it got worse because we had people who testified to a lie. And then it just crescendoed. When we don't want to deal with the root problem. If they want to get down about the fact that they ain't got no black policemen, there's no black businesses, I'm with all of that. But we kind of stop, as you're saying, putting these halos on some people here that really got us in a situation where, you know, it's like going to bat for OJ.
Yeah, I'm not, great point. I'm not going to relitigate Darren Wilson, Michael Brown. I will just, you know, you put your hand in any way on a police officer's gun, in any way, it's like, wow.
You got to kill him. And hope you get
I'm not
going
to say, yeah.
No, if you don't get to that point, then I mean, you know.
I get what you're saying, but I'm just, so when we start talking about conversations we need to have with young black boys, but start with, don't put your hand on a policeman's gun. Just don't do it. And so anything that got described after that, you know, so I'm not going to relitigate that. They have chosen to relitigate the convenience store deal. And in its relitigation, the New York Times picked up this story, CNN, everybody picked up the documentary story.
Saw, yeah.
Yeah, the part that you saw. And the next thing you know, there's gunfire outside, shots into the convenience store, a protest last night, and all this other stuff, because the media thinks printing an allegation is journalism. We don't anymore think it's our responsibility to vet out the allegation. Let's just run with it and put it out there, and we'll sort out the facts later. Well, the convenience store has now come out and sorted out all the facts and released the entire deal. And what's in the documentary is a lie. The media looks stupid, looks irresponsible. It looks like just what Trump has been saying, fake news.
Well, since you mentioned him, he's a master of fake news. But then again, maybe not, because I didn't ever think it would get to a point where you could grab a piece of pussy and become president of the United States the same year, you know.
Listen, I'm going to say this. Again, what you just said to me is fake news, because you just said grab some, And what he did was talk about grabbing some.
Oh, you don't think he has?
I don't. Why don't, I don't as don't a know. Journalist, I don't have to speculate. I go with facts.
Okay.
And trust me, that's the way I want to be judged. I don't want people to speculate on what I've done. I want to be judged on what you can actually prove that I've done. Because if we as black people set the standard of, oh, speculation's fine, we're going to lose. See, Bob, what, me and you have talked about this many, many times, but I don't know if you believe my point of view. But we're a minority in this country. You have black people running around like we think we're South Africa. Like we think we got numbers. See, when you got numbers, you can operate completely differently. And they had Mandela and them had numbers. We got 12, 13%. We don't have numbers. We don't have good health. We don't have resources. As I like to joke and say, there's only one of us that can fly a drone, Colin Powell, and he plays for the other team. So all this revolution and we're going to go to war, blah, blah, that's, we have been baited into assisted suicide. We don't have numbers. We're not winning a race war because the same white folks that are standing out there with you in the street, yeah, revolution. When the first shot gets fired, watch which direction they run.
I'm not even sure that I understand how you spun that on me to the extent where I have to try to defend a position that I'm not fully comfortable with trying to defend. By that, I simply mean this. First of all, we can win a war of righteousness because there comes a point where...
Whoa. I would agree. That was the lane we had been in, a lane of righteousness. We were the most righteous people in America. Now, if we want to try to go into a lane of unrighteousness and win with lies, we lose. That's not righteousness. And so I believe in righteousness. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, these all of our great leadership from the 60s stood on righteousness. Now we're not standing on that at all. We think we're going to lie. We're going to win with lies and baiting them into a war.
I don't feel that narrative is going to be sustainable.
I know it's not.
Well, let's look at the Black Lives Matter movement, for example. To my belief, it has run its natural course.
They quit funding it.
It was a T-shirt, basically.
They quit funding it.
You're saying
it was deeper than that.
Oh, really? Come on, man. Feel me if I don't know.
There are no, nothing happens by accident, Bob. That's the first thing you have to accept. Nothing happens by accident. Not in America. There's too much money on the line. Again, that's what, it's a chess game, and they got us playing checkers over Twitter. And so, while... Again, the manipulation and all that is a chess match, and it's not an accidental thing. And again, I was saying from the outset, man, Black Lives Matter, man, that's Trump's running mate. That is Trump's running mate. It wasn't Mike Pence. It was Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. And so when you start, because again, I'm from the middle of the country, grew up in Indianapolis, 16 years in Kansas City. I know Middle America, white Middle America, black Middle America, and the whole Trump phenomenon, I could see it coming like, wow, man, we keep going with this Black Lives Matter thing. Trump's going to be president. Mm. Because I could see what it was doing to people in Middle America, what it was justifying and legal. Oh, they don't want to stand on righteousness? We ain't got to pretend to be righteous either. Mm. And when you don't have numbers, again, you better be standing on something
solid,
rock solid.
Solid. Now, that brings up a theme of mine, and that is, what are the best practices at this point then? What can we gravitate to that gives us some kind of hope? in a hopeless situation.
As I said on the last podcast with you last week, and again, I know this is not an American foundational point, but it is for me. Hope for black people in America has, whether we like it or not, whether we like who gave it to us or not, hope has always begun inside of a church and its religious base. And so and that's where our righteousness came from the church. And we have, again, to me, when I look at the history of African Americans, it's the greatest proof of a higher power that I've ever seen. Again, when they rewrite the Bible or add additions to the Bible 2,000 years from now, there will be a story about the African American journey. I'm like, wow, brought to America in chains. And man, they kept their faith in God and wiggled their way out of slavery, wiggled their way through Jim Crow, wiggled their way through the Civil Rights Movement, produced Martin Luther King, and that generation produced Barack Obama. But the previous 30 years before Obama got to the office and then the 30 years after, they went away from their religious foundation.
It was a religion or a spirituality?
Both, whatever you want to call it.
That's a difference.
I agree, but whatever. But I believe, I'm going to just say religion, you say spirituality. We don't have to debate that because I can't figure it out right now. Went away from it, and now they're extinct. Now they're, because again, the setup, the play, again, this movie's already been played out by the Native Americans, the Indians. America's already shown you this is how we deal with a group that doesn't have numbers, doesn't have guns, doesn't know how to fly a drone, doesn't want to cooperate in the direction we're going. We've already shown you the blueprint. This is how capitalism and democracy and the American system, this is how we deal with a group that doesn't want to get on board. And so I look at, and this will sound crazy, but I damn near look at like Twitter and social media. That's damn near like smallpox in blankets. We sitting around thinking Twitter and social media is going to be our savior and these blankets going to keep us warm. And it's taking us straight to hell. Mm. And so, again, if we don't, I just want to go back to if we don't return to our religious roots, because again, hope is the key to all salvation. If you lose hope, you're dead. And so when I look at, I'm hard on this far left progressive move because it's the destruction of hope. The whole system's rigged. White people are in control of everything. You don't have control of your destiny. It's hopeless for you here in America. That's a mind game. That's a war on the black mind. So give up.
Do you go to church?
Do I go to church? No. Mm-hmm. I support the church I grew up in.
Uh-huh.
I remain in contact with my religious leaders there. I pray regularly. I'm a very spiritual person. At some point, I will return to the church on a regular, consistent basis. But at the moment, just again, you asked me a question. I'm going to be completely honest with you. Am I a church goer? No. Do I ask for and ask my faith to guide the decisions I make? Absolutely. Do I stand with Jesus Christ in my mind? Absolutely. Are the decisions... The reason I don't care what people say about me is because if they can say it about Jesus, why wouldn't they be able to say it about Jason?
I guess the reason I asked you that question is because you never struck me as a religious person. Maybe because of what I perceived to be cynicism about most things, I thought that included religion as well.
No, it's a misreading to me, Bob.
I just said that.
Yeah, it's a misreading. Again, I grew up in the church. My grandmother.
But you don't have deaconish ways, though, man. I mean, you.
I got real ways. Yeah, okay, God ain't done with me. Far from it. You know? Far from it. I am not perfect. But again, if you understood.
Church say amen.
Yeah, if you understood my journey, there's Lovey Kennedy, my mama's mama, planted some shit, some stuff inside of me at a young age that you just can't get out. Period.
Mm. I guess the reason I asked that question is after I leave here, I'm going to be with Rock Johnson. He told me to tell you, what's up, Chubby?
What's up?
And that was an inside joke, he said. But anyway, he's running a circle today with about 15 ministers.
Yep.
And that's been a push the gym's been into the last
year. Oh, that's awesome.
You know, and I was in the circle with them last week, and the one thing that I found encouraging was they did open their minds to the possibility that they need to look at things a little more fundamentally, and then before they push the religious thing to a community of young
people.
Or
push the collection plate, yeah.
Yeah, that too, especially that piece of it. So how do we deal with the fact that we have mismanaged so much of the black community's resources through funding through the church for the last 30 years to be able to use that vehicle more effectively in 2017 and going forward?
Well, again, I think what you're talking, a marriage between a Jim Brown and a Mary I. Can and the church, I think clean, because Jim's always understood the economics of change and the economics of our liberation being connected to economics. And so if you can bring these two things together, religion and the American mindset, now you have a chance to correct some of the economic things. But again, I don't think we should just vilify the church and they mismanage the money. And that's true. They got to take responsibility for that. But that may be because the right people, take me, for example, grew up in the church, grew up going to church, not involved in a church, because I could help a church make better economic decisions because I'm not economically desperate. And so I'm standing on a platform where I don't need the church economically, so I can give them advice that is more sound and not in my best interest sometimes. You know, people's number one instinct is survival and do what's best for them.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be in position. So if a Jim Brown is involved in a church, Jim Brown can stand on his own two feet and provide a church the kind of advice that it needs to make better economic decisions. So, you know, I think you've asked a great question. I don't know if I've given you the greatest answer, but
it's an honest one.
Yeah.
And you're a work in progress, as am I.
Yeah.
Started out in the church and then found a number of reasons to question how do I balance and reconcile the fact that they brought us over here on the good ship Jesus, and I've seen people send folks off to war
and that's
in the name
why,
of Jesus.
And again, and I'm like, and wait that's a minute, why on. We're one of the greatest stories in the history of religion. Is because, again, how we got Jesus wasn't even for good intentions. We turned it into something that worked for us.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you really understand, church, religion, it's about hope. If you take away hope, people are destroyed. And so the war on the black mind is the most vicious war being waged right now. And removing our hope and convincing us that we're not in charge of our own destiny, that's how you take a people out. And so, Bob, I want to stop here and pivot because, one, I got someplace I need to go.
You're right.
But, two, I just hope you get what I'm saying now. This conversation right here was off the chain.
Well,
this was Bobby and
okay.
This was me and you.
We got miles to go before we sleep. I got a thing I wanted to ask you about. LeVar Bell, isn't that his name?
LeVar Ball.
Ball. And what's going on with the Ball family, man? What's your take?
You're going to have to tune in to speak for yourself. I'm going to talk about that today on the show.
What time, man? What time, bro?
I think we're on the day. Today is Tuesday. We're on at 3 p.m. Pacific because there's a soccer match. This week we're on at 3 o'clock. Next week we'll be back on at 2 o'clock.
So, parting thoughts, man. First of all, let me assess what has happened today.
Yeah.
You did run over me today. Yeah. And I want a rematch because
No. Because I didn't run over you. Now, look, man, at this broadcast.
I was talking and you cut me off right then. You ran over me, motherfucker.
I know. I did God, because I needed to because, again, this is what I do.
Yeah.
And what I do is
you do it very well.
I identify what works for people and what their strengths are and try to bring it out of them. And so I know what works for me and you.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came here last week, I was like, that ain't me and you.
Okay.
That ain't even you.
Right.
You think it's you, but it's not you. That's you trying to be, I'm a professional broadcaster. And this thing here is Uncle Bobby's Country Corner. That's not about being a professional.
Some nigga shit.
There you go. You had to do it. We almost made it. No, it's some real shit.
That's nigga shit. Yeah.
Real shit. Don't quit doing that, Bobby. This is my podcast today. I don't like that on my podcast. But listen, this is real. And so if you always stay there, what's real to you, you got something special. Dude, you're a unique brother. Your journey is amazing to have experienced the things you had and now be tied into Jim Brown and run with the people you have and met the people you have and interacted with the people you have. It's an amazing journey. So just stay you. You don't need to be nothing. At 62, 63, you can't be nothing else but you. It's too late. you ain't going to be, Jim Hill? Jim Hill, bro.
Yeah, okay.
All you can be is Uncle Bobby.
Now, on that note right there, Jason, you on a health thing right now, man. How's that going, bro?
Why are you trying to keep me longer, man? Look, I'm eating green food.
Okay.
Nothing but green vegetables and juice and green vegetables. Because, dude, I'm old. I'm too old to be this heavy. Anybody with a brain knows that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff I still need to say and do. And I need more time to do it. And so the only way to lengthen that time is to clean up my diet and take care of myself because I want to have more conversations like this.
Man, okay, on that note right there, as we wrap up, whatever you think of me or Jason, I give you 15 minutes to draw a crowd and then you can kiss my ass. This has been Uncle Bobby's Country Corner. And for those of you, for our regular submission today, we're going to get into healthcare real deep at 5:30 this evening, man. Thanks again, Jason, for coming in today.
Thank you,
man.
Bobby.
My brother. Yeah.